Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned into another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. An annual tradition in the Twin Cities since 1981, the Twin Cities Film Festival has for the first time been forced to take place over physical distance, with only a select few allowed into the theater and the majority of the audience participating online. In this extra special episode of RCP, we collaborated with the folks over at the Twin Cities Film Festival to bring you a first-hand look at Hassani Mustafa Johnson's newest film, Takeout Girl.
Is it worth it?
Is what worth it?
Side hustle. Hey.
Moving Lalo shit?
I don't trust you. But Lalo? Lalo does trust you.
What if I go to the cops?
I'll burn the place down. With everyone in it.
You know money fixes everything. I know how to get to the cash.
This is what you want, right? Now deal with it.
You have no idea what you're getting yourself into. I know what Lalo's about.
Take out, girl. Stay out of here. There's animals in here. They break from their leash.
Please just step out the car, man.
Sir, I just...
I asked you to step out the car, man.
In the following segment, you will hear from myself, producer Emma Morris, and Hassani as we discuss the film prior to its official release on October 22nd. Can you give us an idea of your background? What was your childhood like? Who are you and where do you come from?
I am Hassani Mustafa Johnson. I am the co-writer, director, and a bunch of other stuff on the feature film Takeout Girl, which is playing at the Twin Cities Film Festival. I'm a self-taught filmmaker. I learned by watching a photographer, a really well-known photographer, took me under his wing when I was a teenager. And I just kind of move forward with passion. I'm not a scientific filmmaker by any means, but I have a high emotional IQ. And I let my intuition move me in places I need to be for the cinematography, for the story. And I surround myself with some super talented people as well.
What is the premise of the film?
Takeout Girl is a story of a 20-year-old Asian American woman who chooses to parlay her food delivery skills into a profitable drug hustle to try and save her family's business and get her mom the hospital care she deserves.
What do you want viewers to know both about you, the film, and its cast prior to watching it?
The film in and of itself is, once again, it's about a 20-year-old who is presented with the opportunity to use the skill set she has in an illegal activity and to help her family. It's a story that's based upon semi-true life events in the life of my lead actress and co-writer, Hedy Wong. What I would like people to know most about the people who made the film is that we're just really good, hardworking people. And yes, it's a diverse group of people that made it, but it's definitely not diversity for the sake of diversity. We weren't checking anything off. The right minds and perspectives gravitated toward the story and gravitated toward the conversations we could spark by putting this story out there.
What was the climate like on set?
The literal climate was 110 degrees here in Las Vegas. So it's funny how like there's a correlation between extreme temperatures and the crime rate. So we shot in Las Vegas for LA, but the whole cinematography, the cinematography of the film is supposed to make the film feel very hot. We actually put glycerin on the actors to make them look like they're sweating all the time, because when you're hot, sometimes you just get irritable and you make really stupid decisions.
How was working with lead Hedy Wong?
Working with Hedy was incredible. She came to me with the first draft and she came to me with the premise of the film, but all of that was great, but it wasn't exactly the most original idea. What made it original was her personality. No one walks like her. No one talks like her. She's incredibly beautiful, but she doesn't lead with that. She purposely downplays her looks to be taken more seriously.
How did you choose Hedy as your lead, and what was that process like?
If you've never seen Hedy, the best way I could describe her is like, she's a mix of like the most beautiful Asian model you've ever seen, and then Suge Knight from Death Row Records. So I led with that in my draft, made the film about her person, you know, a character who carries her personality. Because I knew if I saw anything unique in her, millions of other people would be like, wow, I've never seen anybody like this before either. She'd be interesting to watch play hopscotch or throw tiddlywinks or whatever. So
how was working with Dijon Talton, and what was the process like to select him for his role?
Dijon, again, really, really wonderful character. He came on as a producer and he filled the role of Nate. I met Dijon almost a decade ago, I think, on the TV show Glee. He was a series regular. He can dance, he can sing, he can act. And I remember I was an actor on the TV show Glee, and we bumped into each other and kind of clicked. And Dijon stood out to me 10 years ago because he's handsome. He has all the talent in the world, but the ego wasn't there. Like, it's like he didn't realize how amazing he was. And when this film came up, I just thought of him, reached out, and he still thought enough of me to still want to do the film. And he believed in me enough to want to produce the film. So I have nothing but fond memories of him. And he's even pushing for the film now. Like a couple of days ago, he reached out. He was like, I think I got a distributor for the film. So Dijon is probably one of the more wonderful people in Hollywood you want to meet.
Was the movie filmed during the pandemic or was it shot prior to it? Also, where was the movie shot?
We did not shoot during the pandemic. We shot 17 days with a small crew of about 7 or 8 people in mostly 2018. Because of problems we ran into on set, we had to reschedule some stuff for later. We shot the summer of 2018, summer in Las Vegas, by the way. And then we finished up in October. We ended up shooting 17 days with a small crew and 23 days, just my cinematographer, myself, and my producer, MJ, and Hetty, and the actors. So most of the time, the crew was outnumbered by the actors. It was a really wonderful experience. We had a really good time. There was a lot of laughing and teasing each other.
How did the switch to virtual events and film festivals affect the way that you got the word out on Takeout Girl?
That is an interesting question because the jury is still out. On the positive side of it, I would say that the entire process of being a part of virtual film festivals has been more morale boosting than I anticipated. As a no budget filmmaker, I sacrificed everything to make this film. I sacrificed my finances. I sacrificed my time. I took time away from my relationship. Like, you know, time me and my girlfriend could have spent together anyway. And all of that was kind of being backloaded because I was going to spend a whole year traveling the country, maybe the world, showing people this film. That was going to be my vacation. So to not have that was, it put me at a very low place. And to be completely honest, it's film festivals like Twin Cities that somehow from Minnesota to Las Vegas have lifted my spirits enough and made me feel included enough to offset the disappointment I felt. So that's a real positive. I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know why it feels so collaborative and connected, but I do feel that. And I feel like when you end up in a program kind of like the Empower series here at Twin Cities, that sort of morale boost, that sort of like, we're looking right at you, we are making this specifically for you, you are included. The scary side of the virtual film festivals is that I am now competing for a spot on a film festival circuit where most film festivals are accepting less films. For some reason, we'd all jumped to the conclusion that a film festival would be able to play less films in a brick and mortar building if they were live than you could play virtually in a day. So like, why not have more films? Well, apparently that notion is incorrect because film festivals have to pay per film to not only program your film on a platform, but secure it. So they're taking less films, which makes 2020 one of the hardest years to get into any film festivals. So it's a time of uncertainty in that manner. And then when you think forward, what does it mean? Like, how many film festivals will no longer be physical because somehow they came out with a farther in the black by doing a virtual film festival, because you can have more people watch each film than you can ever fit in a movie theater. So now will we be missing that human to human connection at a lot of film festivals from here on out? Is that just how it's going to be? Those are the things that kind of leave you in a place where you're not really sure how to answer that question, Emma. But hopefully I gave you some insight on it.
Do you have any advice for aspiring filmmakers?
I have tons of advice for aspiring filmmakers. I would say my number one rule of filmmaking is put people before product. It sounds counterintuitive, but the truth is, treat people well and the product will take care of itself. Surround yourself by people who are excited about telling your story, but also make sure they're excited about you as a human being, because times will always get hard on a film. The people who care about you are the people who are going to make sure that you didn't put all this together for nothing. If someone doesn't care about you, they'll leave. They'll start to sandbag their performance, which will sandbag your film. You want people working for you, not for the movie. So work on your person-to-person skills. Even though there's a pandemic, make sure the people around you know how much you appreciate them. Cultivate your relationships year-round. Spend time with people. Organize events. Because you're not always going to be able to have super professional people on, but a good friend that will listen to you and care to do the job right could sometimes be comparable to having a legit pro on set. I'd also say that you should really take it easy on yourself. I find myself in the middle of a pandemic, and I have such lofty goals because I come from nothing. I come from no real successful people in my family. I don't have a lot of, like, I don't have a reason in my bloodline to believe I should be successful at this. So I'm shooting high to try and break that cycle. I want my nephews and nieces to look at me and say I can be anything for once in my bloodline. And it's really easy for me to get down on myself, even though I'm doing amazing during a time where it's harder than it's ever been to succeed on the film festival circuit. But we have to work harder to look at the bright side. We have to build ourselves up more than we break ourselves down. And we have to work that muscle, massage your confidence as much as you would massage a sore muscle that you're trying to get better. You know, for those athletes out there, you really got to work at being good to yourself. It's a skill. It's not a genetic trait. You have to work at it. So keep that in mind. I think you'll be fine.
Why did you and Hetty make this film? And why this story? What was the importance of telling it?
Well, Hetty needed to tell it for very personal reasons. And I can't speak for her, but I can say that through many, many conversations, there's a deeply seated, there's a deeply rooted desire to express the angst of her 20s. And this film does that. And there's an even deeper desire to just make her family proud. For me, I just wanted to find an entertaining way to engage people to get people to engage in conversations about nature versus nurture, about socioeconomic status, about femininity and what it means, what it looks like on screen, and to talk about myself as a filmmaker so that I can make more films, that sort of thing.
What's next and where can we find you?
oh, we plan on submitting way more films to Twin Cities in the future. And we have two short films. My cinematographer is kind of like my film partner. His name is Alberto Triana. He is directing a short film and I'll be shooting it and editing and whatnot. We're shooting that before the end of the year. I'm doing a short film a couple days after that, based on true events in my life. It's called Blunt. It's the story of being in an interracial relationship and how that played out. Meeting my girlfriend's mom for the first time and how we grew closer with the help of weed. So, the feature film, Alberto's feature film debut, we're shooting that probably first quarter 2021. And the name of that film is The Only Feeling Infinite. And it's about a woman hellbent on getting revenge. You can find me at Hisonni, H-I-S-O-N-N-I, on Twitter. And you can find me at Hisonni J, H-I-S-O-N-N-I-J, on Instagram. You can find the film at Takeout Girl Feature Film on Facebook or Instagram.
After speaking with Hisonni, neither Emma nor myself could wait until we got to see the film, and we got our chance on the 22nd as soon as our virtual school day had drawn to a close. The next day, I gave Emma a ring to discuss the film. My first impressions of Takeout Girl, I really liked it. I thought that before we talked to him, he did a really good job of when we talked to the director, he did a really good job of painting like a really accurate picture of what the movie was about and just like the characters and kind of his lived experience and how that like impacted the movie that he made. Yeah, I guess that was my thing. And then like the one note that I took was from the first scene, and it was because on the back of her hat it said never compromise, and that was like it centered in a lot of the shots in the movie, because they like to shoot her from the back or like from an angle where you couldn't see her eyes because you could only see the hat. And so like I was thinking about like just that theme of like not compromising the whole movie and like doing what you want like to better yourself, and not really like, she's definitely I'll have to censor this when we go back and edit, but she's definitely like a no bullshit kind of person. She's like, you know, she's like, this is who I am. I'm not taking anything from anyone. Like, yeah, I dug it.
No, yeah, I also agree that like Hisonni did a really good job of like giving a great description and like synopsis of the film without like not revealing anything, but also like enticing you to watch it. And that was like the first note I also took was about the hat. So the back of it says never compromise, and then there was a straight razor on the front of it, which I was like, this is interesting. It's not like a sports team or anything. Maybe it is, I'm not sure. Not really, you know, not a sports gal. So I don't really know much about that. But then I also noticed, you know, later in the film when she, you know, starts to make some cash, she gets a new hat, which also has a straight razor on it and also has the like never compromise on the back. And yeah, I think it was really cool that it was her story, just maybe emphasized a little bit for the movie magic, you know. Okay, yeah, I also thought it had a very like, she had a very bad vibe from like the moment the movie started. She had that like attitude, which, you know, we're gonna have to bleep this out too, that's like, do not with her, like she doesn't take anything from anyone, like literally in the first like 3 minutes of the movie. That like scene at the school, college, right? She's like 20. It's just wild. I loved it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like the first few minutes of the film really solidifies like who she is as a character, and there's not really a lot of like, I didn't ever really find myself kind of like what he was saying, like before he went into like work with her, like he waited for a while to like make sure that she was genuine and not like putting on a front and like acting like someone she wasn't. But like once you see her on screen, there really aren't any doubts about, like, I never was questioning in the movie, like, oh, is she really up to this? Is she capable of handling herself in these situations? Like, nah, she's got it. Like, she was definitely, like, the femme fatale role, but also like in other movies, a lot of times I've noticed that like there's that female lead, but then there's like a male character who's like necessary for them to succeed, but there wasn't really anyone. Like, she was just carrying the whole thing by herself the whole time, and like trying to take care of her mother and take care of her family, keep her brother out of trouble. So she was very much like the like superhero of the movie, even though it wasn't like a superhero movie, I guess I would say. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Also, like going into just talking about like the movie's aesthetics, when you're talking about like the hat and stuff, I thought that like a lot of like the choices of things that they filmed, like I was like, in the, especially in the beginning of the movie, when she's like on her bike, like just riding through like her neighborhood and stuff, and they're, you know, like guys just covered in tattoos, guns, drugs, people rolling dice, you know, a homeless dude passed out on like an old mattress. And it's like showing her in this like environment, and it was very like contrast, because you don't expect her to be from like a place like that. But I also thought it was really interesting, just like from a director's standpoint, like going it, like I don't know like how much of that was staged and how much of it was real, but like I'm assuming that some of it was at least not staged, because it looks like they were filming in like actual places. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's the wonders of movie magic that make, like he said in our interview, Las Vegas look like Los Angeles. And yeah, it, like, he very much so got the vibe right, because sometimes you can like tell when like a movie is trying to like have themes of like drugs and like violence and stuff, that it's like very staged almost, and kind of like, oh, this is kind of weird, why is this, what is going on here, you know, like. But he did a really good job with that, and so did Teddy. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. What did you think about the family dynamics of the movie? Because I thought that that was super interesting, not just like, not to put any spoilers out there, but for like those of you who watch the movie, obviously like we're discussing drugs and, you know, themes like that and violence and stuff. But just to give like a little basis, Hedy like works at a restaurant with her family. It's a family-owned restaurant. And obviously she becomes involved with drugs at some point, hence like the themes of the film and just everything that's going on. But actually the people that she ends up becoming connected with, who are in the drug scene, they're like the people that are doing the dealing and stuff are all family members themselves. Like, they're all related, you know, so it's like a brother and a daughter, I think, working up front, and just like, it's like a two family businesses going into business together concept, which I thought was really interesting, because you see a lot of like the same stuff that's going on in the one family that owns the restaurant in this other like very dysfunctional family that's like selling drugs out of like the back of like a comic book store, basically. But yeah, what did you think about just like the conversations she'd have with her mom and stuff like that?
Two families, or is it, you know? The dynamics were very interesting, because there was like a family connection. Like, her cousin would always work the till, and her brother was like, you know, he would show up every once in a while, and he was, you know, supposed to be helping out, but, you know, he was slacking off. And her other cousin, you know, there was a scene with him and her brother, and he was just there. But I it was very interesting to see the mother-daughter dynamic between the two, because like you like felt that connection, even though like I mean I don't know if it was actually her mother playing the role. I'm gonna assume it was probably an actor, but like it felt real. It actually felt like it was her mom. Like, it felt very emotionally connected. And like, you could see like the pain that her and her like cousin felt, because they like wanted to help her mom so very badly and just like couldn't, or were trying their hardest. Her brother just kind of didn't do that. Like, he claimed to want to, but there was just none of that. Yeah, and also just like single parent household, like badass mom just trying to help her children and other like relatives just prosper. It was like something that isn't really shown in that light. So I found it really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It was super interesting, like what you were talking about, like the fact that she was struggling, like her life was a struggle and like things were not going super hot for the family, but she was still definitely like the hero of the film in the sense that like the film makes it made the people who struggled the most seem like the best people in the movie because they were working the hardest to like put food on the table and help their family and stuff like that. And I think that that's like kind of a good segue into my next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the clothing in the movie, because we were talking earlier about the hat and how when she got more money, like she got a different hat and stuff like that. But I thought that like the way that they used clothing in the movie was really interesting because when we were talking to the director, he was saying that they had for, like almost no budget, like it was very limited budget for the movie. So obviously when she starts making all this money selling drugs and stuff, like the stereotypical thing to do in other movies is like have her driving nice cars and like buying expensive things, but instead like her wardrobe was like the way that she showed off her wealth, like her clothes and her hat and like cosmetic things about her changed as she made money, but her environment never really changed, which I thought was really interesting. And then also just how like there was this one scene where she like looked at herself in the mirror wearing, I think it was near the beginning of the movie, but she was wearing like the takeout shirt and she just like looked disgusted with herself or whatever, like for wearing that shirt, and like how like the shirt was like a negative representation to their family, like they felt like they were almost enslaved to the restaurant. I thought that was like really, really powerful. I don't know, what did you think about the clothing aspect of the movie and like the way that they chose to use clothes?
Yeah, it was really interesting because they kind of redid that shot later in the film when the, oh my gosh, his name has left me right now. Not the like main drug lord guy, but his like the one that's always like interacting with her, like comes into the bathroom to talk to her. But yeah, they like redid that and I thought that was interesting. But like you said, yeah, typically with any movie where it's like someone's dealing drugs and starts to make a lot of money, there's always that shot where they're like driving a Benz, driving a Maserati, driving some sort of like super luxurious car with like, you know, the money guns, just like shooting dollar bills, like, you know, very like over the top, like, oh, they're like wealthy now. And it's always like, oh, where did you get all this money? Like, but yeah, it was really nice almost to see it like be shown subtly, because it still went unnoticed to her mother and it didn't raise any suspicions because she drives like a beat up old car. And I think if all of a sudden she pulled up in like a brand new vehicle of any sort, it would raise concern from everyone. And yeah, it was very interesting to see that because like it was subtle, but it like grew during the movie. Also for her brother's birthday, she got him like what seemed like a rather expensive watch. You know, I'm not a watch expert either. But it, yeah, you like see it and you're like, huh. And then he's also like, he like kind of clocks her and is like, where did you get the money for this? Which like, you know, leads into like that dynamic a little bit, which was very interesting. I don't really know how I feel about it. But yeah, the, like, portrayal of clothes was really interesting, and I think it was a really great way to, like, subtly show her wealth, if you can call it that. Yeah, going back to her brother, I, like, didn't really love his character, which, like, is kind of the point of the, like, his character almost. I mean, I'm sure Hetty's brother in real life is a lovely person, but, he's almost there as, like, an antagonist to, like, piss her off and like further the story. And it like almost seems like they at one point did have a good dynamic, because there's that like shot when after she's like crying and her mother's crying, where she's like looking at their fridge with like all the photos of them, and there's a photo of him and her and they look like happy, and then like right after that it's like they're arguing almost. So yeah, that was just something interesting that I picked up on.
But yeah, I agree. He was an interesting character. Like you were saying, that he's kind of like an antagonist or a bad guy who moves the plot, but then it's also her brother. And it's ultimately like one of the more important connections that she has in the movie with any like other human being. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't have any siblings, so I can't, this is terrible. We needed to get someone with siblings, to sit in on this. Cause that's the thing is like, I have heard from people who have siblings that that's a real thing, that love-hate dynamic where, like, you love them, obviously, because they're your sibling, but you also hate their guts at the same time. And it, like, it seemed like they almost kind of had a love-hate relationship, but at the same time, there were definitely times, like you were saying, when she was crying, and then there's that, there's, like, a scene where they're in the hallway of the restaurant talking to each other. And so there's a couple scenes where it seems like they definitely like each other, but then there's also a lot of scenes where you're like, they hate each other's guts, so it's very hard to tell what's going on there.
There were, I feel like there was just, like, this, like, deeper, like, unconditional love that it's like, you know, family always sticks together, especially with them, you know, kind of have to, like, your mom is working hours and hours and hours and, like, so very hard for you, like, the least you could do is, like, stand to be in each other's presence, you know. It was a weird dynamic because he almost didn't show any appreciation for her, and I mean the same was reciprocated like a little bit with Tara Hetty's character, but you know, later in the film obviously there's things that happen in the last like 10-15 minutes that you're like, even though they don't really talk or, like, you don't like each other or fight all the time, like, Hetty's character, Tara, really, like, cares about him and would literally do anything for him without giving any spoilers away, but, it's wild.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was one of the things, like, it's, like you were saying, is that unconditional love, but then at the same time it makes you think if they weren't in that circumstance where they felt like they had to stick together, you know, maybe they would have been those siblings who are like, oh yeah, I haven't talked to my sister in 20 years or whatever. You know, like, it could have been that kind of situation. But, like, yeah, like you were saying, the necessity of, like, having to stick together as a family was really what was, like, important for them.
I think that, like, we were talking about the family dynamic earlier, but we've really just focused on Hetty and Tara, her character, and her family dynamic. I think it was really interesting. Lolo, I think, was his name. The guy.
Lalo.
Yeah, Lalo. The drug lord guy, if that is the correct term we would like to use for him. Hetty's character meets him, you know, delivering food. And then later it's, like, learned that, you know, he tells her, like, everyone here is family. Like, and it's not just, like, a, oh, we've worked together, so we're, like, a work family. It's, like, no, quite literally his daughter is, like, an employee of his, drug distribution. it's brought up, and then, you know, someone gets beat up. That's not really a spoiler, you know? Someone, he has someone, dealt with, and Hetty's character brings up, like, oh, like, is he family too? I think his name is Manny. And he kind of is just like, not anymore. Like, so it's like, what? He was like, yeah, he's dead to me. And I was like, oh. And then she like, you know, we all kind of were like, well, is he actually dead? Like, did they just like get rid of him? Like, take care of business? Like, what happened there? What?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, like, going back to that moment that you were talking about where, you know, she was asking him, like, what their relationship was, like, his people. Because I think how it came up is she called them, like, unprofessional or, like, said something mean about them. And he's like, these people are my family. And she was like, what, like, your business family? He's like, no, like, that's my brother, that's my daughter. And then I think Manny was, like, his nephew or something. But he was related. He was a family member. But yeah, she was like, was he family too? And he was like, nah, not anymore. Like, nah, just not, he was, but he's not. And then, you know, is he dead? He's dead to me. But yeah, just the way, and also like the way that their family like functioned, you know, like everyone was answered to Lalo and everyone was scared of Lalo and no one really did their own thing. It was very peculiar. I didn't quite know what to make of it. It was almost like if, like, obviously Lalo's family and Tara's family are very different, but Lalo's family was like what Tara's family could have been like if her mom was like an evil super genius, or like, you know, like an evil drug kingpin, you know what I'm saying? Like, it, because they were all devoted to each other in the same way that Tara's family was devoted to each other, but for obviously very different circumstances. They weren't selling noodles, they were selling drugs. But that dynamic was really, really interesting.
A couple little things that I really enjoyed, were that, well, one, Nathan Dijon Talton's character, right? He wasn't really a focal point, like, the relationship between him and Tara Petty's character. You know, there was a little something going on there, but I really appreciated that for once in, like, a million years, like, lifetime, whatever, of, like, movie making, that a woman's, like, romantic relationship wasn't the focal point of a movie. Because even if a movie isn't about that, there tends to be, like, this, like, underlying theme of romance, and it just wasn't really there. It was kind of just like, oh, this is just an idea we're gonna, like, plant into your head. This might be helpful later. I really enjoyed that. Also, just, like, the shots of, like, after Hedy starts dealing for Lalo, it was just, like, a 10-minute sequence of, like, really cool, like, switch-offs between her and, oh my goodness, what is the guy's name? His brother. And he was, like, oh, you're getting good at this. And it was, like, just really kind of cute, almost. It was just, like a sweet moment in the near 2-hour-long anxiety-ridden film. I really enjoyed it. Also, once she starts making, like, you know, the continuing, like, counting of all the money, she, like, it, like, cuts to a scene where they're, like, driving to this, like, location with a real estate agent, in quotations, obviously, because we all know what's going on there, and how she, like, the real estate agent tells the mom that they won a grant when it's not at all that. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that definitely reminded me of, like, Breaking Bad, just, like, trying to figure out some alternative excuse. Like, oh, I just came up on all this money, like, let's spend it.
How do I discreetly give my mother $20,000? Like, it kind of reminded me of the movie Good Time with Robert Pattinson, directed by the Safdie brothers. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not.
It's really good. It's similar in that Robert Pattinson's character is just out of jail and then immediately starts doing stuff, robs a bank, and then it's just an hour long, like, oh my god, is he gonna get this done, is he gonna do this, is he gonna do that, and then, like, it ends and it's really good and all. But yeah, it kind of felt similar in that the pace was very, like, not stressful, but not in, like, a bad way, like, stressful and, like, a, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. Definitely the whole time I was just like, oh my goodness.
Going off of what you said about the pace, I noticed there was a few times where they would have, like, her doing, like, the money counting sequences and stuff like that, and the music would be really, really hyper. So I remember one time distinctly, this is the one time that stood out to me where I was like, I gotta take note of this for the review, and so I'm glad you said that. But there was a time where I really had to use the bathroom, so I was literally standing, like, at the door ready to go to the bathroom, but the music and what was going on was so intense that I couldn't leave. But then it abruptly just stopped and she just walked into the noodle shop to, like, go to work or whatever, and then I just paused it. I'm like, all right, I'm going. But, like, it was crazy how it goes from 0 to 100 so quick like that. And then my last comment was just kind of about what you were saying with the romance and stuff, and I really appreciated that too. That's kind of what I was talking about earlier with, like, the femme fatale role, is, like, the example that came to mind was Wonder Woman, how it was, like, pitched as, like, this really, like, woman-centered movie, but then she has this relationship with, I cannot remember his name, but he plays Kirk in the new Star Treks, that guy. But they get into a relationship, and then he becomes, like, the co-star of the film, and he's really important, and the relationship is very centered, like, in the movie. But in this film, it was like, oh yeah, here's this guy that she kind of maybe likes. And then, like, I think there was a reference one time to his mom, her mom being like, oh, you were out really late last night and you're like really happy, what happened? And then it just never is discussed again. They're just like, oh yeah, they both have their own lives, but this movie isn't about that. This movie is about her being a bad and selling drugs and trying to save her family. So bravo.
Yeah, and she kind of like rejects him at first too, because he's like, oh, how about dinner sometime? And she's like,
she does, yeah,
like, who the f do you think you are asking me to dinner? Like, you know, she it was so funny. And I just like appreciated that she wasn't just like falling over in love with this man, even though, you know, like Hassani said, he's like a super sweet guy, and you can even see it in his acting that he's just like a genuine, like, nice person that seems like he has good intentions, even though, like, you know, you learn later in the film that he like went to prison and you're like, oh, you wouldn't expect that from him almost. But yeah, it was kind of cute, kind of fun. And then just like, oh my god, that just to like kind of finish us off here, you know, like that ending.
Facts.
Oh my god, literally, I was chopping stuff for dinner. I was literally like cooking dinner and watching the movie, and I was like, I like stopped dead in my tracks. I was like, oh my god, like the whole like last 10, 15, 20 minutes, I was just like, like, oh my goodness. Just, you're like, oh my god, the entire time you just like, you're like, what? Oh my goodness. Like,
yeah, I think it was like the last 20 minutes were just one thing after another, just insanity.
Yeah, it was like insane. I really first just like, you know, before that happens, there's like a scene where Lalo gives her almost hush money, if you could call it that, kind of just like a very fat stack of cash, you know, as he puts, for her troubles. And you're like, you'd think that it's like, okay, this is done. Like, the film's gonna have a happy ending, you know? But then it's like, no, he's a drug lord. And earlier in the movie, he kind of mentioned, or his brother was like, if you ever stop, I'm gonna burn your restaurant down with your whole family inside of it. So you're like, oh, no, he's definitely not done here.
And then they then say that was a joke, which I thought was just hilarious. Like, oh yeah, we were just playing about burning your place down.
And they were like, haha, JK, like, no, that's not a joke, especially when you are a criminal, you know? But yeah, oh my goodness, just him going to the restaurant with his brother, Lalo and his brother, and I, oh my god, like, tell me, what were your thoughts on that? Because I was just literally shook, like, the entire time.
I was so shook, and, like, I don't want to give too much away, so I'm not going to talk specifics of what characters do what, but there are just some crazy facial expressions, acting-wise, where, like, there's not even many words said in that scene at the beginning, but I'm just like, what is going on? How do all these people know each other? Like, what is about to happen? Like, this is not gonna be a good, like, I was thinking, like, maybe it's happy resolution. He just comes and he's like, hey, how's your retirement? I'm here to buy some noodles. But it was like, nah, like, it was going down.
No, you're like, oh my god, it's about to go down. Pardon my French. Should we, like, give it a rating out of, like, I don't know?
We should, yeah, before we wrap it up. So, what's something in the movie that we could rate it out of? I don't know, I like unique rating scales. I don't want to use stars.
Snapbacks? I don't know.
Yeah, let's do that. How many Razor Never Compromise snapbacks out of... Let's do a 10 scale, because I feel like 10 gives more room.
Ooh, that's like a hard question, because I really, really enjoyed it.
Would a 5 scale be easier?
No, I think 10 is good, because it does... 10 gives you room to be like...
It does.
Okay, yeah. I don't know, because like, as much as I love the film, I wouldn't say it's like 10, 10, 10. I definitely think for like an indie film that like Hisoni, he said he has like, not that he doesn't have any formal training, but like, you know, he didn't go to film school. He's just a guy that like was taken under the wing of a photographer, and
which, mind you, you couldn't tell by watching the movie.
Exactly. I definitely would give it like 7 or 8. Razor, never compromise, snapbacks out of 10.
That's where I'm sitting. I'm thinking I would give it like a 7.58 Razor, never compromise, snapbacks out of 10 as well. Because I'm thinking, and I'm not sure if it's just because I've been like really missing the movie going experience, but like there was something different about watching that versus just sitting and like watching a movie on Netflix. Like, I felt much more engaged and invested in it, having talked to him and just, like, it being part of a film festival and all that. And something new as well and exciting that's relevant to, you know, especially there's, not to go into it too much because we have to cut this short, but there's, like, themes of police and racial policing systems as well, which is very relevant today.
Yeah, we didn't even cover that, and it's, like...
Yeah, and that's in there as well. So, yeah, I would give it the same rating, 7.5 to 8, Razor, Never Compromise, snapbacks out of 10. Very well done movie all the way around. Highly recommend you watch it.
Check it out. Twin Cities Film Festival.
That's all for the Twin Cities Film Fest special edition episode of RCP. Stay safe, Minnesota. We hope you stay happy, healthy, and connected. A special thanks to Hisani, as well as all of the folks over at the Film Festival for their support and collaboration. We couldn't have done it without you. Until next time, signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.